There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
You're listening to Midday Mobile. I'm Cam Marston. Sean is away right now, sitting in for him in this second hour of the show. I have on the line, and we'll introduce him in a moment, Ron Fauché. Ron is a pollster, and goodness knows pollsters don't usually get as much attention, I think, as they've gotten this past week. The predictions of the outcome of the election were, I guess, right, but not right to the margins that many of the pollsters had determined or suggested that they would be. And one of the great benefits of being me and having access to the radio is I get to get people on the radio and ask them questions that would be strange at a cocktail party or strange if we bumped into each other in the mall. And this is going to be one of those times. I want to know who pollsters are, what they do, where they go, what they look like, what they're doing when they're working and everything. And the subject of this question is Ron Fauché. Ron, thank you for your time. Welcome to Midday Mobile in Mobile, Alabama.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So, Ron, I'm going to read a bit of your bio here, and you are publisher of the Political Odds Maker. As publisher of the Political Odds Maker, Fauché correctly predicted the winners in 98% of national political campaigns between 1995 and 2005. You've also been on some major networks. You've been interviewed by Jim Lehrer on PBS NewsHour, NBC's Today Show on NBC, Nightline, etc. This is undoubtedly the pinnacle of your media career right here, right now, and I hope you agree with me on that.
Well, thank you. I mean, polls are getting a lot of attention after this election, as they did last night, because in many instances, they did not paint the picture of the election that people expected. And our pictures of the election that squared with the actual results. And so there's a lot of controversy about it. And one of the things I'm trying to do with my newsletter, Lunchtime Politics newsletter, is we're in the process of doing a series of a number of articles explaining very candidly what happened. None of the polls that were publicized about the presidential race or the congressional races were done by me, so I think I have a unique perspective in knowing the business without having an interest in the numbers that have been getting out. So we're going to do that. If anybody, any of your listeners, would like a free subscription, just go to lunchtimepolitics.com, and we'll be happy to send it to you.
All right. Well, I'll ask you to repeat that throughout the show so we can get those that are interested another chance to write it down or type it into their phones, whatever it may be. So you were not a part of the group that predicted the outcome today, or last week, rather. Tell me, and this is the question that I think pollsters are wide all around are getting, what happened? What did you get wrong? Not you, but the job. What did those people doing the job get wrong?
Well, I can tell you very specifically what they got wrong, and that is Donald Trump's strength. The average of the last 21 national polls came very close to getting right Joe Biden's vote. They were within a point of Biden's vote. But on Donald Trump's vote, they underestimated his vote by over 4 points, which in a big national election is a lot. For instance, the average margin that these polls showed Joe Biden getting was over 8%. And in actual vote count, it was only about 3%. So even though the polls were correct in showing Joe Biden winning and Donald Trump losing, they exaggerated the Joe Biden margin to a pretty good degree. And so one of the things that I think pollsters now need to look at and analysts now need to look at is answering the question, why? Why did they get Trump's vote so wrong? And there are a number of reasons that explain it, some of which pollsters won't like to hear.
Let's take a step back, and I want you to give me a definition of a pollster so that we're operating out of the same book here. What exactly is a pollster? I think I know, but I want you to clarify this for me.
Well, a pollster is someone who professionally conducts surveys, and those surveys can be of small numbers of people, like, let's say, members of a group, or, you know, directors of a corporate board, or members of an association, or they can be surveys or polls of the general public, of the voting public, in a presidential campaign. So it could be any of those. And so pollsters, in effect, the people who take polls, and the definition of polls can vary from, you know, doing small sample polls, large sample polls. Some polls are done by calling people on landlines. Some are done by calling people on cell phones. Some are done through automated calling. And some are done through online interviewing.
So when I finish buying something, let's say I call Delta. Hadn't done this in a while, but when I call Delta Airlines, and they say, how would you, if press one, if you would be willing to take a survey after your interaction. I press one, and after the interaction, the question is, would you hire this person if you had the ability to hire them based on your how they handled your issue, the reason for which you called Delta? And I enter an evaluation of that. Is that a poll?
Yes, that is a poll. Now, in some cases, those kinds of polls will be conducted in-house by the company that's doing it. But in other cases, they will hire outside pollsters like my firm or other firms because they want to make the point to their customers and their employees that it's a legitimate anonymous poll, that nobody is influencing it for any in-house reasons.
Right.
And that by having an outside pollster do it, it would have more confidence.
Now, the dubious listener is going to say, well, whoever's hiring the pollster is going to influence the outcome. If I'm the Democratic National Committee versus the RNC, and I'm hiring a pollster, that pollster is kind of going to be biased a little bit, though they claim not to be. They're going to be biased a little bit on the outcome. We got 1 minute. Can you react to that real quick before we go to break?
Well, the answer to the question is, if a pollster is biased to give a client what they want to hear, that pollster is violating every ethical rule of being a pollster. It could be like going to a doctor and asking the doctor to give a diagnosis, and the doctor pulls punches because he thinks that the patient doesn't want to hear the truth.
Yeah.
But the pollster is supposed to give the truth. And look, there are some pollsters who may be doing that, and I can tell you that practice is wrong.
I'm wondering, and this is what I want to know when we get back from break, how they got the Trump candidates, or the Trump, yeah, President Trump's numbers, how they missed them. And I'm wondering, I mean, goodness knows, if my phone rings and I don't recognize the number, I don't answer it. And it could be a pollster calling me. Let's start with that when we get back from break. You're listening to Midday Mobile. I'm Cam Marston. Sean Sullivan is away, and I'm running the show right now.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
This is Cam Marston sitting in for Sean Sullivan today. I'm on the line with Ron Fauché. Ron teaches at George Washington University's Graduate School of Political Management and Public Policy. He is a pollster, and prior to the break, we were talking about, Ron, how they got the Trump numbers so wrong. I'm wondering if you have a hypothesis on this.
Well, there's a number of reasons that can explain something like this. One reason is the normal margin of error. polls are not precise instruments. They have a scientific margin of error, usually a plus or minus of 3 points. So that explains why not every poll is always exact, but it does not explain why most polls are making errors in the same direction. And in this particular case, the same direction was overemphasizing Democratic strength and underestimating Republican strength. The second reason why polls could be wrong is if the pollster does a sloppy job and doesn't administer the poll properly, has biased questionnaires and sample selection, and that can make a poll, throw a poll off, and that does happen. It doesn't happen most of the time, but it does happen. But it also doesn't explain why so many polls might have been wrong in this election. But the third reason, I think, maybe is the best explanation, and that is that there was in 2020, as there was in 2016, a hidden Trump vote. They were voters who did not want to publicly say they were for Trump or even admit it to a pollster. And because of that, Trump's vote in polls was always about maybe 2, 3, or even 4% lower than what he actually got. And, you know, that certainly needs further study. But,
Ron, you there?
And perhaps the best explanation of why Trump underpolled.
So if it happened in 2016, Ron, it would seem like they would have, you know, fixed it. That you say, hey, gosh, we kind of got snake bit in 2016. Let's shore this thing up and maybe give Trump some bump here in the numbers here, because this might happen again. Do you know what efforts the pollsters made after 2016 in preparation for 2020 to make sure it didn't happen again?
Well, I know of some of the efforts, most of them made. You see, the problem was coming out of 2016, most of the pollsters did not conclude that there was a hidden Trump vote, because it's hard for a pollster to talk about anything that's hidden, because there's very little way to get to it or measure it or figure it out. So their point was, which was valid, was that the polls underpolled people who didn't have college degrees and overpolled people who did, because polls and everything shows that Trump does better among voters who don't have college degrees, and the Democrats generally do better with those who do. So I know a lot of pollsters did attempt to make sure that the samples on education was more accurate than it had been in the past. The problem is that doesn't explain the whole thing and doesn't solve the whole problem, because both candidates are getting votes from people who do not have college degrees, just like both candidates are getting votes from people who do have college degrees. And I think a lot of pollsters haven't identified a hidden vote because they don't believe it exists. And of those who may believe it exists, they don't know how to measure it. So I think that's why the problem wasn't solved. In our newsletter, we warned about this happening before the election, that it was very possible if there was a percentage of voters, a small percentage, but in some cases a decisive percentage of voters who were not telling pollsters that they were for Trump when in fact they were. And I think that needs a lot more study. And I think it's time for the polling industry to come to grips with the possibility that there was a hidden vote. It was intentional. People did it because they didn't want to have to defend themselves. And that's how it worked out, because that's really the only thing that explains the difference. Because keep in mind, the polls got Biden's vote pretty close to right. Where they were off was on Trump's vote.
Right, right. So what would you do if you were in charge, and we're now talking the 2024, where we'll see this whole thing go through again, what would you do differently?
Well, number one, it may be a phenomenon that only affects Trump and Trump voters. And if Trump isn't on the ballot in 2024, it may not be a factor next time. But if for some reason Trump is on the ballot, or if there is another candidate who encourages that kind of what you might call a hidden vote, I think what's needed is additional questioning of voters who might be undecided, who might not say, and to sort of probe them more and to figure out, you know, to what extent, even though they may not say they're voting for Donald Trump, but to what extent they agree with his policies or agree with certain aspects of what he does. That may be the way to solve the problem. And you could probably take data from the actual polls that were taken, you know, before the election, and you could, you know, reverse engineer them and figure some of that out based on that data. So all of that is possible. One thing I would point out in my background in Louisiana politics is that we have had a number of candidates in Louisiana where there was a hidden vote. When David Duke ran for governor in the U.S. Senate, there was a hidden vote. There were a lot of voters who didn't want to say they were David Duke, who was a former Ku Klux Klan official, and even though they voted for him. And it was very difficult for pollsters to figure that out. When Jim Garrison, who was a former district attorney of New Orleans, who claimed he had cracked the John Kennedy assassination case, was in office, he had a similar situation to Donald Trump, where the political establishment didn't like him. He was very controversial, and a lot of people didn't want to defend the fact that they were for Garrison, and that was in his case too. We've also had situations in some of the smaller parishes in Louisiana, and you may have had this too in Alabama and Mississippi, where local political machines sort of instructed their supporters not to tell the truth to pollsters because they wanted to confuse and befuddle their opponents. So you know, in the past, in terms of localized politics, you know, regional politics here, we have seen this before. It's not something that has never happened. And you also have had a situation that's kind of a reverse of this, which was called the Bradley effect. Tom Bradley was an African-American mayor of Los Angeles. He ran for governor of California, and the polls showed him winning, but on election day he lost. And what most people believe happened was that a lot of white voters were saying they were going to vote for Tom Bradley, an African-American, but when they went in the polls, they didn't do it. And so that was a case of where people were saying they would do vote for somebody, but then didn't do it. In the case of Trump, it's the case of people not saying who they're voting for, but then are voting for the candidate. So we've seen variations of this theme, and it really needs to be carefully studied.
When I interacted with you yesterday, Ron, I sent you a report that I pulled out of a newspaper on exit polls, and I had no idea there was this much detail that people asked about there. When we come back from break, I want to talk to you about how they find people. If you need a white, male, non-college educated voter, how do they find that person? Or do they go for them, or do they just talk to whoever answers a random phone call? I think this is interesting in the work that you do and how you get this information. Let's talk about that when we get back from break. Midday Mobile, Cam Marston sitting in for Sean Sullivan.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
We're back. This is Cam Marston. I'm sitting in for Sean today, and on the line with me is Ron Fauché. Ron is a pollster. He is the president of the Claris Research Group in Washington, D.C. He has written a book called Running for Office, The Strategies, Techniques, and Messages Modern Political Candidates Need to Win Elections. Ron, just prior to the break, we were talking a little bit about how the pollsters find people. And I'm wondering if that's not a part of the challenge they have in getting the results right, is finding the right people to ask the right questions of. You care to comment on that?
Yeah, well, generally speaking, pollsters are contacting people based in a purely random way, which is based on the whole theory of probabilities and randomization of samples. The problem is, in the modern world, where you have a lot of people who do not answer landlines, and a lot of people on cell phones who may not be answering on cell phones, you have an increasingly small response rate, which excuse me, which makes it more difficult to get a representative sample. Pollsters are dealing with this and fighting with this all the time, but generally, have developed a series of techniques to figure out how to handle this in most situations. It's not a perfect method, but it's probably the best method we have to figure out how voters think and how public opinion shifts and moves from time to time.
So some of the pollsters called. I want to figure out the role the pollster plays in what I watched last Tuesday night of the networks calling the elections. Tie these two groups in there. Does the network, Fox, CNN, whomever, do they have their own pollsters, or are they contracted with different pollsters to provide them information?
Well, first of all, most pollsters would not have the information necessary on election night to call an election, because election calls are usually based on the actual vote count, not the polls. Even an exit poll, which people talk about, polls that are taken on election day, and now they're with early voting, they begin taking those polls before election day, are still polls. And election calls on election night, where they can be informed and you can help figure out what the information looks like based on polling, but it's really based on actual election results, and that's a collection method that news organizations go through. They work with local officials. They get the vote counts as they come in. That actually has very little or nothing to do with the polling process.
I see. So the pollster, as of election night, is really looking at the TV just like I am, wondering how close they got.
Yeah, generally speaking, now, I know in my case and in other cases, news networks will bring us on to analyze what goes on, but essentially, we're watching the results come in just like anybody else.
I know from your bio, you've been a candidate in some elections in Louisiana before. And one of the questions that I had as I watched the Tuesday night information coming in was, where does this information come from? Let's take the state of Nevada. Is there somebody in Nevada who is handing out sheets of paper to the network saying, we now have this many votes for so-and-so, this for so-and-so, and they tally 49% of the population? Where does that data come from?
Well, I can't speak directly to Nevada because I'm not an expert on their specific approach, but generally speaking, what happens around the country, you have to keep in mind the networks and the news organizations do not run this process. All they're doing is covering the process, and that the process is run by state election officials who administer the elections, who have custody of the voting machines and the ballots, and they have processes that have been outlined by the law that explains how they get the votes, and how they count the votes, and when they do it, where. And generally speaking, what is happening now is they get the counts, they get cartridges from voting machines, and they put them all together in a central location, or at least get the data together in a central location. Data can move without you having to put it in a car and drive it somewhere. And then they add all the counts together. So all of this done is done by state election officials. It should be a totally transparent process. Some places it may be more so than others. And they add up the votes, And then, for instance, Louisiana, you know, it goes on the Secretary of State's website. And then what people do is they go look at the vote counts, where it's coming from, and then they figure out analytically where the vote that isn't in yet is coming from, and they try to make some determinations about that. You know, for example, in an election in Louisiana, where New Orleans is a liberal Democratic city that votes overwhelmingly for the Democrats. But Louisiana is a conservative Democratic state that the statewide elections as a whole generally votes for Republicans. So if on election night, 80% of the votes from outside of New Orleans are in, but only 10% of the vote from inside New Orleans are in, well, that's a good indication that the Democrats will expand their lead as the New Orleans vote comes in. So that's sort of the art and the science of it. But I think a lot of people think it's the networks that are determining who's winning elections, and they're producing the data, and they're not. They're simply are given the data by state election organizations and authorities, and all they're doing is analyzing it and reporting it.
So when the network says we're giving the state to, we're calling it, you know, and there's a big swooshing sound that comes on the television and drum beats and things like that, they're calling it, that's a network decision. That's not the state of Louisiana saying we're calling
it. That's exactly right, and it's a guess. Now look, it's a highly informed guess. I mean, I've called a lot of elections for networks before myself, and you're very, very careful about that because you can look foolish. You know, if you call candidate A winning at 9 o'clock and then at 11 o'clock, candidate B wins. I mean, you never want that to happen. But there is pressure on people who call elections to do it quickly. And so basically what you do is you look at the return. You compare them to past elections. You figure out what vote is in and what vote isn't in, and the likelihood that the vote that isn't in can or can't overturn the result, and then you go make a decision on it. But there is nothing official about those calls. They are essentially done by people like me and others, and done by reporters and political analysts who sit around, look at the votes, and they're making their best determination. Now, a lot of elections, you know, somebody wins by a wide lead. So those elections are easy to call, but it's when they're very, very close, that's when it gets difficult. And that's why I think the networks have acted responsibly this year in waiting until they got more data in before they attempted to call some of these states.
Do you feel the process that you've just described to me works?
Well, you know, the answer is yes, it works. It's imperfect, but yes, it works. The problem is that if you don't like the election results, you're not going to like the process. And if you like the election results, you're going to tend to be happy with the process. And in every election, you have Democrats who are upset because they feel like they lost an election for some reason that had nothing to do with them. And our Republicans get upset. They feel like they lost an election for reasons that have nothing to do with them. But truth and in fact, most people who lose elections lose it because not enough voters vote for them.
Yeah.
and win elections because enough voters vote for them.
The answer is fairly simple, huh?
Right. It's pretty simple. And the process isn't right. And I remember the 2000 election where they showed the state of Florida was, you know, going back and forth,
yeah,
and they called it to Al Gore, and then they pulled the call back, and then they called it to George Bush, and then they had a recount, and that shows you what happens if you make a call too quick.
Yeah. When we come back from break, Ron, when we come back from break, I want to hear your opinions on what we're going to see the next time around. You're listening to Midday Mobile. I'm Cam Marston, sitting in for Sean Sullivan.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Hey, 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 hey.
We're going to wrap it up with Ron Fauché here. Ron, I want to talk to you about what we're going to see next time around that may make this election more, the next election rather, more predictable. But before we do that, I want to remind everybody tonight at 6 p.m., you'll hear What's Working with Cam Marston. We'll have attorney Knox Boatler on talking about how we can take on the big corporate giants if we're just a little person like you and me, and you got an icebreaker that's broken six times in 4 years at some point. Something's got to change. Knox walks us through what to do if that's the case. All right, Ron, let's wrap this up. What are we going to see differently in 2024 during the pollsters' work? How are they going to try to account for this? Is it candidate-driven? You kind of implied that a little while ago.
Well, first of all, let's hope that there isn't a coronavirus across the country.
Yeah.
So that will affect how people vote and the methods they use. But generally speaking, I think what we'll see is that pollsters, you know, and the chatter is the same that it was 4 years ago. They feel like they didn't properly weigh or get the opinions of voters, particularly white voters without college degrees. And they undersampled them before the last election. Some of them undersampled them before this election, although many of them tried to do it. I happen to think that Donald Trump, to some extent, is sui generis, and is meaning that he's different, and his support base is structured differently than most conventional candidates, and that accounts for the hidden vote, why people don't want to say they're for him. That may not be a lasting problem that exists once Donald Trump is off the landscape, but generally speaking, I do not see radical differences between what was done before this election and the next election. But hopefully people will continue to do studies and figure out how they can make the polls better. But, you know, when you solve one problem, another one crops up. And I think that's what happened over the last week.
So do you think this phenomenon of the hidden voter, is there a comment you have about that, or a commentary perhaps you have about that? What is that indicative of, from a pollster's point of view, that people are afraid, even anonymously, to tell a pollster who they're going to vote for? That's got to pull your hair out, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and I think it's also a byproduct of a very bitter, polarized electorate. I think people from both sides would agree that there's a tremendous bitterness in the country between Trump supporters and Trump opponents, and there was a stark differences in how these people saw politics and thought about politics, and the differences were very deep, and there were social problems created. There were a lot of family discussions at the dinner table that ended up in fights over whether people should vote for Biden or Trump. And there's been surveys that show that people won't date people who didn't agree with their choice of a presidential candidate. So when an election becomes that polarized and that bitter, I think it encourages people, for a variety of reasons, not to want to talk about who they're for. And I think a lot of people, particularly college graduates, who hang around with other college graduates who tend not to be Trump supporters, were afraid they would be socially ostracized or professionally harmed, discriminated against, if they were viewed as being a Trump supporter. So they didn't want to tell anybody about it. In some cases, they didn't even tell their spouses or close family members, and they didn't want to tell people whether they were interviewed on the phone or online, of who they were for, because they didn't know whether somebody could figure it out.
Interesting. So even in a guaranteed anonymous environment, these people are afraid to vocalize their support.
Yeah, I think that is the case. Now, I don't have much data to back that up. You know, I have to tell you, a lot of what I'm saying here is a guess.
Yeah.
And all this needs further study. But it's the one guess that sort of explains everything. I've been reading a number of well-done analytical pieces from people around the country over the last few days about what may have happened. And the bottom line is, if you assume that there was a hidden vote where people were intentionally not expressing who they were for, that really explains everything. It's the easiest explanation, but it may also be the best.
When you had the experiences in Louisiana, you mentioned a couple of the candidates there you saw, as well as in Los Angeles, I think you said it was, or California, where there was a hidden vote. What happened? I mean, not the outcome of the election, but did this resolve itself in some way down the road?
Well, most of it was personality driven. You know, in the case of David Duke in Louisiana and Jim Garrison in New Orleans, it really was about them. And once they were off the scene, the problem went away. In the case of the Tom Bradley situation in California, it was about race. And of course, you know, that still exists in the country. But over time, that faded. For example, when Barack Obama was elected president, he did not have, you know, he was obviously the first African-American elected to president, but he didn't suffer from the Bradley effect. He didn't suffer from white voters saying they were for him, who then went in the polls and voted against him. There was no nothing beyond any possible negligible numbers that showed that to be the case. So over time, that looks like that has resolved itself, you know, through social means and the sense of social acceptance. And that may very well be the case with Donald Trump. If he's not on the ballot again, then, you know, the whole crop of Republican and Democratic candidates in the future may not have to worry about that.
And I'm seeing stuff in the media that says he is raising money, perhaps, for his next campaign if he doesn't win this one. Ron, tell everybody the email or the website they can sign up for to get your newsletter.
You can go to Lunchtime. It's spelled just like it sounds, lunchtimepolitics.com. And you just give us your email address, and we'll send you the newsletter. It's free. There's no obligation. And if you ever want to unsubscribe, you're certainly free to do that too.
Ron, appreciate it. This is Ron Fauché, folks. He is in D.C. He's the president of Claris Research Group, explaining to us a good bit about how polling works. Thank you so much, Ron. Folks, you're listening to Midday Mobile. I'm Cam Marston, sitting in for Sean Sullivan. I'll be back Friday with some interesting stuff again and some really weird and random stuff in the second hour. I'll talk to you on Friday. Thanks, Ron.